Ross Molin Podcast.
You better know it.
Welcome to episode 203 of the Ross Bolin Podcast, otherwise known as RBP 203, presented by Bolin Media. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here with Mr. Anthony Johnson, a.k.a. AJ. AJ, what's up?
What up, what up?
And joining us again today, Mr. Mike Moody. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, man. You know what? I need a haircut. I need you guys to let me know if I need a haircut. What do you think?
I don't think so at all.
2 days out?
You're 2 days out.
Okay, because in my head, it feels like I should have gotten this done last week. I'm approaching 40,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I still haven't, like, landed on a haircut that works. That's a problem, right?
Oh, that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
That's like, I don't know how you move on with the rest of your life when you haven't made that decision yet.
I can't do it. I need to talk to Barrett, I think.
Man, you really do.
Yeah.
He's the person who helped me get along the way.
Really?
To finally figure mine out. Yeah, he's the person who convinced me of the whole, you need a legitimate barber to be a man in this world and survive.
Yeah.
Because Barrett is my buddy who's been like getting expensive, I'm not going to throw out his personal information, but he's been getting expensive haircuts.
It's worth it though.
For years and years.
The man is well coiffed.
He is. Sure. He is. He's a very well-kempt man. And when I say expensive, I don't mean $40. All right.
Well, that's more than that.
I mean, like ladies' prices. Like this man is coughing up many, many dollars every time he gets his hair did.
Well, he probably gets the full treatment, like blow dry, eyebrow wax.
They don't blow dry.
Happy ending.
He may get an eyebrow wax. I can't speak to how it ends, but I know it ends with a good haircut.
Yeah.
And the man has a good head of hair. And inarguably, Mike, it is difficult to. For the first 20 years of my life, I would go to I went to Great Clips or fucking sports.
Great Clips is terrible.
They are. That was my spot, though. Great Clips was where I went every time I needed a haircut.
Name is very misleading.
And I would, because they're not great. I would go and sit down.
Mediocre Clips.
And they'd say, what do you want? And I'd say, do this, but shorter.
Right.
And that was it for 20 years or whatever. And so they would cut across, you know, like I came out of every haircut for 20 years looking like Lloyd Christmas from Dumb and Dumber. And I mean, I know it's funny, but it's not a joke. It really did happen for 20 years. And then finally, one day I went into a Finley's here in Austin, actually the one down BK's.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's still there. Anyway, I went into a Finley's, which is like, you know, it's a, I'm doing air quotes, barber shop, but it's a chain. There's lots of them. And I went into a Finley's and I was like, I met this dude. I was like, look, man, I explained the situation to him. This is all I've been saying to a barber for 20 years. Make it a little shorter. And then they just do whatever the fuck they want. And he was like, no, I'm going to figure out what to do with your hair.
Nice.
And he did, which was basically like, it's like a short, I don't know what, it's just a normal dude's haircut. I don't have like a complicated haircut.
Yeah.
But there's something to, you need a person who's going to sit down and figure it out, like how to make your head look good.
Every time I walk in there, like, I'm like, just give me a normal guy's haircut that looks good, but that is different people have different interpretations of that.
Well, and everyone has a different head, too.
Yeah.
You need to, like, do it for that person's head.
Right, right.
And it ended up happening with me. At Finley's one day, my dude that had brought me to the light, this guy that had given me my first real haircut, he wasn't there. He was sick or some shit.
Oh, no.
And I got sat with this chick. That was, you know, filling in for him.
Yeah.
I've been with her for like 6 years now.
Oh.
She stole me from him. She went off and started her own business. I use her every time I get my haircut. I go to the same chick. She's fucking incredible. I'm not even going to give her name out on here because I don't know if she wants me to. I know we've talked about her before. If you wanted to go back and find her name, you probably could.
She needs to cut the check.
She's incredible, and she cuts my hair every few weeks or whatever, couple weeks if I'm being responsible. And dude, it's a game changer.
Nice
to know what you to know what you're doing with your hair,
right?
And to have somebody who knows what they're doing with your head.
I did have a barber for a while, but she got scooped up by some movie production company to work for them, and she moved to LA like 2 years ago. And since then, I just kind of been free floating.
See, at some point, I'm gonna lose this girl. She'll be gone. And then I'm going to be stuck where you are now. I don't know if I'm going to be able to have the strength to jump right back into the game and go find somebody else. I might just go back to being shitty haircut guy.
Great clips it is.
Maybe the next 20 years will be shitty haircuts all over again. I got something I wanted to bring up at the top of the show.
I do also, but I'll let you go first.
The men's Wimbledon final yesterday between Djokovic and Roger Federer.
Legendary.
Was one for the history books. The first ever fifth set tiebreak at 12-all in the Wimbledon final. It was compared to HBO's 7 Days in Hell. Did y'all ever watch that?
Yeah.
With what was the parody?
That was it.
Was that Andy Samberg, right?
Yeah, Andy Samberg of Saturday Night Live and Lonely Island and of whatever that police sitcom he's on cable. I think it's wildly successful.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, he's like making a ton
of
money.
It's a great
show.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Award-winning show.
And then Kit Harington of Game of Thrones, obviously. It was compared to that because the match went on almost 5 hours.
Jeez.
It was 4 hours and 57 minutes, the longest Wimbledon final, men's final in history. Now, I want to compare that to something. When you go play golf, I don't know if either of y'all are big on golf, but when you go play golf, especially in the summer or in the spring in Texas, it's very, very hot. And golf typically takes about 4 hours, right? That's a standard 18-hole 4 hours is about what you expect. Now, if you get through faster, like 3 or 3.5, that's a great day. If you get through 5, that's a shitty day. You got a backed up day, too many people on the course, whatever. After a round of golf, actually, fuck that. Usually around 12, 13 holes into a round of golf, my energy is gone and I suck for the last 4 or 5 holes and I'm miserable and I want to go home. And that's usually the case with golfers. And if you live in an incredibly hot area and you play a lot of golf, I'm sure you identify with this issue. Imagine if you can, that instead of driving around a golf course in a golf cart, drinking cold beer and with a fucking cold towel around your neck, instead of that, imagine if you were sprinting back and forth in a rectangle for 5 hours facing off against Federer or Djokovic tennis.
These gentlemen are what we call athletes.
They are.
Golfers.
Not so much.
Casual golfers. Not so much.
Well, professional golfers in some cases, not so much,
That's true. Yeah, I've seen the bellies on those guys.
It blows my mind the energy these dudes have. Like, I didn't watch the entire thing, admittedly, because I'm not a hardcore tennis fan. And 5 hours is a very long time. I woke up 3 hours into the fucking thing and was tired watching it. Like, I was still exhausted just watching these men run back and forth. It ended up being grueling, this match. Djokovic went on to win. We've got some numbers, some Wimbledon by the numbers for you that I pulled from Forbes. I pulled the ones that I found to be interesting. This was Djokovic's fifth Wimbledon title, his second straight, his 16th Grand Slam crown. Federer and Nadal are the two guys Djokovic is chasing to become basically the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Nadal's 33 years old. He has 18 Grand Slam crowns. Djokovic is 32. And is 2 back of Nadal, 4 back of Federer. So I think it's pretty clear he's going to catch them, most likely here.
Oh, for sure. At the rate that he's going?
Well, considering he's won 4 of the last 5, yes. He seems to be on pace. Having won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open in 2018 and the Australian Open in 2019 before losing to Thiem and the semis of the French Open, which was won by Nadal. He's an insanely successful professional athlete at this point, arguably the greatest tennis player of all time. I can't believe that he's my age, 32 years old, watching. I've hit the age where when you're watching professional athletes who are either at your age or younger than you, doing things that you have absolutely no hope of being able to physically accomplish anymore, and it's depressing.
Yes, it is.
It's fucking depressing. Like, watching the NBA draft a couple weeks ago, these kids are like 15 years younger than me and shit.
Zion.
It is mind-blowing.
Wait till you're watching. You get to the age where you're watching TV.
Yeah.
And everybody's younger than you.
Yeah.
Wait till that happens.
The one that my dad tells me, he's like, wait till you get to the point where all the professional athletes you grew up idolizing and watching on TV, you're watching all their kids play.
Right.
He's like, yeah. That shit is when it hits you hard. You'll be watching a game and they'll drop a name and you're like, that sounded familiar. And then they get into it and it turns out it's like the son of a guy that you watched.
They're like,
growing
up. So-and-so the third.
Yeah.
You know, on that, here's a weird thing. And forgive me if this is a little too weird. But, you know, growing up, I'm like, man, Lisa Bonet is fine as hell.
Okay.
Now I'm
you
like.
Say fuck, Mike.
Fine as fuck. And now I'm like, man, Lisa Bonet's daughter on fucking Big Little Lies is hot as hell.
Yes, dude.
Wait, that's wrong.
She's Zoe Kravitz's mom.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Good for Lenny.
Yeah.
And everyone involved, really.
For sure.
But yes, you're absolutely right. That is the next level of sadness and creepiness that occurs in life. First you realize the professional athletes, then you realize like the models and the celebrity women and their daughters are now right. It's a sad stage.
Yeah.
69 was the combined age of the two finalists in Wimbledon, Federer being 37, he turns 38 in August, Djokovic being 32. And also, the other thing that's crazy about those numbers, 37 years old, 32 years old, you don't consider 5 years to be a huge gap, right? 5 years
is not
that much space in the time frame of 32 to 37. It doesn't seem that shocking of a differential, and it didn't seem to be on the court either. That being said, it is a big difference. 5 years of hardcore competitive tennis on your body at the highest level is going to wear on you, and professional athletes endure a different type of stress than we understand as normal civilians. It is a big deal. I know it doesn't seem like it, but 5 years is a big deal in professional tennis at the top of the world. And Federer deserves a shit ton of credit. In fact, Djokovic gave him credit in his post-match presser, talking about how it's inspiring to watch a guy at 37 still come out and give it to him like he did. I mean, Federer, I don't want to say he choked it away, but he had two match presses. He got broken twice with two match points, and Djokovic pulled one of the most insane breaks I've ever seen. It was just point is, if you didn't watch it, go watch the highlights. You'll still be tired.
Don't spend 5 hours watching the whole replay.
You don't need to.
You don't need to do that.
Go watch the highlights. It was nuts. It was a lot of fun. And congratulations to Djokovic. I think he's the greatest tennis player I've ever seen. Watching him turn that match on its head yesterday was crazy. And he never seemed panicked, and he gave the greatest, like, are you not entertained face when it finally ended. He was just like, y'all motherfuckers like that? That's right. It was just the cockiest little smirk, dude, and I love that about that, dude. If you're new to our show, by the way, the Ross Bolin podcast, almost every episode is going to be broken down into segments, which you can find with time cues below in the description. Obviously, we talk about a lot of different random shit on this show every week. We want you to be able to consume the podcast at your own pace, depending on your work schedule, your commute, or whatever. So we try to give you segments with time cues so you can break up the show as needed. Listen to the parts you like. Don't listen to the parts you're not interested in. Perhaps you could give zero fucks about sports and don't care about tennis at all. Or you hate tennis. Maybe your uncle was struck by a tennis ball when you were a child and it killed him. A tennis ball.
It's dark.
That would have to be a very hard-hit tennis ball. And ever since then, you've been traumatized. You can't listen to tennis talk. That's fine. You can see the time cues below in the description. Skip right over that shit. Follow us on Instagram at the Ross Bolin Podcast, where every day we fill up our Instagram story with photos and videos sent in by our listeners, you, the RBP gang. I pick up most of those photos and videos through my Snapchat, like 99% of them. At WR Bolin is my name on Snapchat. If you're curious as to what kind of things we're looking for, go check out the highlights on our Instagram at the Ross Bolin Podcast. And keep the snaps coming. I'll pull the best ones every day and throw them up on the Instagram story. We're on Twitter as well, at Ross Bolin Pod. You're going to see a lot of the same stuff you see on Instagram, but there's more back and forth interaction with followers and listeners on Twitter. It's just more conducive to the sort of back and forth conversation like that. We're also on Facebook as well, but Facebook sucks. RBP 203 is brought to you by Bird Dogs. brand spanking new supporter and sponsor of RBP and maker of the most comfortable all-purpose shorts in the fucking world. You can literally wear them to do anything, anywhere, at any time. Perfect for the damn summer, too, I might add, when it is incredibly hot. They're gym shorts, like with a built-in, silky soft inner liner that makes underwear completely obsolete. You no longer need your underwear. You can burn the drawer if you would like. They're incredibly comfortable. It's going to feel like you're basically wearing nothing, like you're walking around completely naked in the nude, just wandering society without bottoms on, which is completely insane. You would feel uncomfortable if you walked around in public butt-ass, Pooh Bear, in a t-shirt with no shorts on. You're not going to feel uncomfortable in Bird Dogs. You're going to feel the opposite of uncomfortable. Incredibly comfortable. And you can wear them in the water, too. You can wear them swimming. They dry faster than a bathing suit. In Bird Dogs, you could hit a workout, jump straight into the pool, get out, dry off in the sun, then wear them to drive around in your Tesla because you have a Tesla now, and then drive that Tesla back home and wash it with your new yellow Lab Rex because you're wearing Bird Dogs and, bitch, you can do anything. I wear mine to do RossFit in the garage. I wear them to Barton Springs on the weekend to take a dip in the springs and cool off. And sometimes when I don't feel like doing laundry, I really just wear them to go running if my running shorts are all dirty or whatever. But most importantly of all, I wear Bird Dogs when I'm relaxing in the comfort of my home office 7 days a freaking week. Go to birddogs.com. Enter the promo code Ross. They'll throw in a pair of nunchucks. Birddogs.com. BIRDDOGS.com. Use the promo code Ross. And AJ, I'm going to repeat this. They'll throw in a pair of nunchucks.
I've always wanted nunchucks.
Nunchucks, Mike.
Like, honestly.
Wait, is nunchucks like a brand of short?
No. N-U-N.
Like a deadly weapon.
C-H-U-C-K-S. Like, they're going to give you an actual weapon along with your pair of Bird Dogs when you use the promo code Ross. Boom. A free pair of nunchucks with your pair of Bird Dogs. You will not take these things off. I promise you. You will make love in your Bird Dogs somehow holding your pair of nunchucks safely off to the side so that they're not involved in the coitus.
I mean, get them involved.
There's no reason not to.
Yeah, some people are into that.
But it's personal preference. BIRDDOGS.com. Use the promo code Ross. Get you some Bird Dogs, most comfortable shorts in the world, and a free pair of nunchucks. That's got to be the best promo anybody's ever thrown our way. I'm a huge Ninja Turtles guy. Huge Ninja Turtles guy when I was a little kid.
Who's your favorite?
It might have been Raphael. I was a big nunchucks guy.
I was a Michelangelo
guy. Wait, was Michelangelo's who I meant?
Yeah, Michelangelo.
Michelangelo's orange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Raphael, purple.
Yes.
Wait.
No, Donatello's purple.
Raphael's red and he has the
Leonardo
little
blue.
Yeah, Raphael's the leader.
I was way off. I told everyone I was the biggest Ninja Turtles fan and then I choked.
But there are different iterations.
Donatello had like the bow staff.
Yes.
And at the end, Michelangelo had the nunchucks. And
yes.
Then, yeah,
Michelangelo was the party dude.
Yeah.
What were the size?
Size.
Yeah.
That is Raphael.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's the other one. Leonardo, what did he have? Just like a sword.
A sword, bro. Yeah. Just a samurai sword. Okay. Straight up. That's sick. Did not fuck around at all. It's funny. This is random. But when my little brother was born, I very specifically remember this. I don't remember very much from my childhood. I remember this. My little brother was born and I was all pissed. We were 5 years apart, speaking of 5 years. And when you're 5 years old and your mom's having another kid, it's confusing. You're like, oh, this is bullshit. The fucking attention was all mine. Now there's some other little kid. So my grandma gave me a Ninja Turtles action figure. It was what's the big bad guy? Splinter. No, Splinter's the helpful one.
The Shredder.
Mm-hmm. I got a version of the Shredder, like a new action figure version of him that was terrifying. And I remember being like, this is so worth it. Sure, there's this new little shit that's going to be here and take all the attention away from me, but the Shredder!
But I have the Shredder.
I was so pumped. I remember being like, yeah. They're like, kiss and hug your brother. I was like, yeah, great. Good to meet you, dude. The Shredder, though! I was so pumped.
Did you guys ever play the Ninja Turtles game for Super Nintendo? That was one of my favorite games of all time, by the way.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember which
that,
one was
that game
Super
is
Nintendo.
Still a blast to
was
play
was that the side-scroller?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, that game was so much fun. If you played it right now, I guarantee you would enjoy it.
The arc. Like,
it has a lot of replay value.
Oh,
you remember that game?
Turtles in Time!
Yeah.
Yes!
That played this all the time. Game was awesome.
All the time, speaking
of time.
Yeah,
I never beat it.
Yeah, it was a side-scroller.
It was pretty hard.
Speaking of Ninja Turtles video games, I mean, we can't bring up Turtles in Time without bringing up the whatever the arcade version of Ninja Turtles was that was in every Chuck E. Cheese, and
that was fun too.
That shit was the best.
Wasted many quarters.
The best. Over Mortal Kombat, I would say, and I would prefer.
Wasted all my allowance on that shit.
No, yeah, for real though.
Straight up.
How much is that these days?
What?
How many quarters do you have to put into one of those to play? Like 9?
Well, you don't do quarters anymore. If you go to an arcade,
it's
you
like
have to
PayPal.
Yeah, you have to like buy a wristband and or
gotta,
buy a card.
You
like
get Bitcoin. Plug in your Square Cash account.
Do you guys ever go to pinballs here in Austin?
No, I've heard about
what is that?
It's a great arcade. There's three versions of pinballs. The original one, which is in Midtown, is catered more to people our age. So you can go in there and you can drink and hang out.
And there's throwback games.
There's throwback games and pinball machines. It's pretty great. And the one up north is kind of separated into parts for families and parts for adults. Like, they have a bar there, too. It's pretty dope.
Okay. No shit. Yeah. I might have to check that
out. And they have all these old games.
Love it. Fucking love it. Oh, by the way, quick announcements. When we get a new sponsor, like Bird Dogs today, and we have actually another new sponsor coming later in the show, it's important that y'all show them love. We obviously strive to bring you sponsors and products that we believe you'll love and that we think will really improve your life. And if maybe not for you, then for someone you know, like a dad or a brother or a mom or a sister or whatever, so that our sponsors' products will work great as a gift. Support the sponsors that support us. Go to the website URLs announced at the end of every sponsorship reads. I mean, you can just, honestly, even if you're like, fuck, I have $0 and 0 cents, I can't help, I'm a broke boy. That's cool. Just type the URL into your phone and check out their products real quick. Maybe send it to a friend or whatever, too, if you want. I mean, that's the best you can do if you've got $0 and 0 cents. But if you have money and you like a sponsor and a product they're bringing to the table and a deal that they've offered the RBP gang, go after it. And then let us know. Like, let us know on email or social media or wherever. Tag our sponsors. Be sure to send me snaps with sponsor stuff. If you buy some Bird Dogs and they come in, shoot me a picture, man. I'll put them shits up on Instagram.
I want to see pictures of those nunchucks.
And the dude.
Yeah, I do want to see those.
Honestly,
I'm very interested.
If our Instagram next week isn't just people using nunchucks,
right?
If we don't become an Instagram account just for nunchuck enthusiasts by next week, I'll be incredibly disappointed. Likewise, if you ever have an issue with a sponsor, do not hesitate to hit me up and let me know about that as well. I will hear you out and see what I can do. But the point is this. Our sponsorships are very important. These are our partners, people who are helping us make this show happen, so be sure to support them. Happy birthday to Kristen's fiance, which was yesterday, July 14th on Sunday. Kristen sent a very thoughtful message. In fact, two. She sent a DM. She sent a follow-up email to make sure that her fiance would get this birthday shout-out, and she omitted his name in both cases.
Huh.
You think maybe that was for privacy reasons?
No. I think, strangely, this is a very common mistake. It is. People get too excited. And they're like, I would love a shout-out for my boyfriend or my fiancé or my girlfriend. And then they don't say her name. Fortunately, I'm sure Kristen is and her boy, they can figure it out.
Let's make up a name for
how
him.
Many people are engaged to people named Kristen whose birthday was yesterday, Sunday, July 14th?
We'll call him Matt.
Sad.
Give him a pseudonym.
Maybe his name is also Kristen.
Kristen, number two. Kristen 2.0. Happy 25th birthday, though, for real. Go to patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast if you want two additional episodes of this show ad-free each month, plus columns and more. Any amends, AJ?
I have an announcement.
Oh, announce it.
For anyone who cares about professional wrestling, The Undertaker returned to WWE.
Dude, I saw this.
And he won his match.
I saw this
again?
On Twitter.
He's back again?
He's old as dirt.
He actually
is an Undertaker now. He actually is rising from the dead at this point because he's up there.
He's old, man. It's funny. Our old
office. He still has it, though. He can still move around and do his thing, you know?
He doesn't look that bad. At our old office, he used to go to the chiropractor two floors above us or some shit.
Oh, really?
So we would see the Undertaker would be like walking around the office campus like once a month. We'd be like, hey. There's the Undertaker.
You should have asked him to choke slam.
He's huge.
I was gonna say he's local.
Too scared of him.
Get him on
the
pod.
Pretty dope memory.
He would be a fun one on the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You should reach out.
He would just talk about how he loves Trump the whole time.
Is he a huge Trump guy?
He's total. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. I'm sure what is it called now? Is it WWE? Where are we?
Yeah.
WWE.
World Wrestling Entertainment.
I never know.
Because the WWF is the World Wildlife Foundation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Undertaker, we missed you.
You know who we could get on the podcast since we're talking about wrestlers?
Hoomst.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Texas native.
Why do you have confidence you could achieve a stone cold appearance?
Dude, there's celebrities all over this neighborhood. He probably lives here.
He probably lives somewhere near here, yeah.
I saw Connie Britton walking in the neighborhood the other day.
What?
Yeah, look at that.
The fuck? I never see anybody famous.
Get her on OCC?
Ever. For real. I'm like the anti-famous magnet, dude. I never see famous people. It seriously is bizarre. People always see like Sandra Bullock walking around. I'm like, man, I've never seen Sandra. I've been here for fucking 8 years. I eat at her little lunch spot like at least a few times a year in an effort to one day see Sandra Bullock, and it's never happened.
Oh.
Sad. Very unfair. Moving on. First segment.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I do have one more random fact to bring up. I don't want to keep like derailing the show. I think it was on OCC. You were talking. I know this is not OCC, but on OCC, you were talking about Euphoria.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see this episode, so no spoilers. But the episode from last week at the carnival.
Yeah.
You remember Kat when she banged that carny?
Yes. How could I forget?
The carny, that guy who played the carny?
Yeah.
He was actually in the Adam Sandler movie that I was in.
Shut up.
His name is Will.
Small world.
Yeah, he actually bangs an underage girl in that movie also.
Okay.
So I guess he typecast himself.
Okay.
Does he have like a
what
mustache and is he like all sweaty?
Yeah, he actually looks like
it,
that.
It is a little bit of a faded stash and
that's not a character. He actually is a douchebag.
That scene.
For anyone who even knows what I'm talking about, yeah, watch Euphoria.
Were you in Grown Ups 2?
No.
No, he was in another.
No, it's called. I don't know if I ever told you the story, but. Well, I guess to keep it short.
Tell me the movie.
The name of the movie.
Yeah, the movie is called Men, Women, and Children.
Oh, okay.
And it's starring Adam Sandler, Jennifer Garner.
And you. And this guy.
Yeah, me.
AJ.
Ansel Elgort from The Fault in Our Stars and Baby Driver.
Bro, how fucking bizarre would it be the second time you go to do a table read or whatever and you find out again. Your role is going to have to hook up with an underage chick, essentially committing.
I told you he typecast himself. And that's what happens.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's going to be the case for Dacre Montgomery.
Who the fuck is that?
I think that's how you pronounce his name, Dacre. He plays Billy in Stranger Things.
Billy. I love that dude.
He typecast himself as good-looking dude who bangs MILFs.
He's fantastic. Speaking of mustaches,
forever be his role.
He has one of those as well. All right, now we're moving on.
Yeah, let's go.
First segment. Facebook's $5 billion slap on the wrist. So, we are obviously not big friends of Facebook here. I love Instagram, I will say, which is Facebook-owned, and which is sad also. But I fucking despise Facebook for all number of reasons that have been talked about over the course of the years this show has existed, none of which we're going to get back into today. But big news on the Facebook front. You remember all the shit that was going down with the Cambridge Analytica fallout, which was the data analytics firm that exploited Facebook's data of black adults and its largest user group and 87 million Americans or whatever. Ever since then, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has been working out what they're going to do to punish Facebook for the issues, the scandals, the controversies around the lack of user data privacy. That whole thing that popped off, what was that, 2018 when it started?
It was pretty recent, yeah.
Ever since then, they've been trying to figure out what are they going to do. What they ended up doing was fining them $5 billion. Okay? Now, that sounds like a lot of money. It's the largest civil fine ever imposed by the FTC. The previous record was, just in case you were curious, $22.5 million paid by Google in 2012. And I actually remember when that happened. And I remember being like, oh, because that was a lot of money. $5 billion is several, if you took $22 million, and you stacked it up a whole bunch of times, you would have to take a lot of $22 million chunks to get to $5 billion. That's all the math I know about it, okay? It's a huge difference in money. It's like if the record used to be 2 seconds, and then the new record is 0.07 milliseconds. You'd
the
be like,
speed of light.
You'd be like, what the fuck happened with the new guy? It is an insane fine, and yet almost completely meaningless in this case. Why? Facebook brought in $15.1 billion in the first quarter of 2019.
Wow.
A quarter, in this case Q1, is 3 months. January, February, and March. By the end of Q1, they don't care about $5 billion. Their stock has actually gone up 48% on the year. $5 billion is about 9% of their total revenue for 2018, which ended up at $55.83 billion. So $5 billion doesn't actually move the needle for these guys. And the problem here is, if you're thinking like, well, it's $5 billion, like, they're not going to forget that this happened. Yes, but the whole point of fines, it's supposed to be an amount of money that makes you change the way you act permanently moving forward.
Yeah, Zuckerberg's just like, you want a check or what? Like, I got that in my wallet.
He doesn't care, man. That's like if you got a DWI and they were like, all right, I'll be $20. You'd be like, oh, fuck, really? Here's a 20. I'm out. You'd be way more likely to make the same mistake again if you were only fined $20 for a DWI.
He's like, yeah, what are you, at FTC on Venmo?
No, I got shit.
This.
Yeah. It is a problem, and it's a weird one. And when it comes to fines and, like, punishments and standardization of such, like I just spoke to the DWI deal, it's kind of weird. It's almost like, shouldn't it be a sliding scale, like, based on your value? Because rich people get a DW, you know, let's say a guy makes $2 million a year in salary. That's a shitload of money. That would put you firmly in the 1% if you were curious. If you make $2 million a year and you get a DWI and your fine is $10,000, it's not such a big deal. If you make $25,000 a year and you get a DWI and your fine is $10,000, your life is ruined.
Your life is over.
That is a completely different set of circumstances.
That's half your annual salary.
Yes, you quite literally could end up on the street. So it makes no sense to me that there isn't a sliding scale for stuff like that. I also understand that judges are there for that purpose, to try to add some fairness into the system. But I don't think that happens a lot of the time. All this is to say, holy shit, $5 billion doesn't matter to Zuckerberg. I cannot believe that a number that high is so inconsequential. That's how big this company is, man.
You know what would be an adequate punishment? You got to take away Zuckerberg's grill. Can no longer smoke meat.
That
would hit him pretty deep.
That's what they should have done.
That would hit him
AJ.
Pretty hard.
His grill and his hoodies.
No more smoked sausage, no more brisket.
Tell that man he can no longer smoke meat.
Take away the baby, what's it called? Baby, sweet baby Ray's or whatever. The
yeah.
Fucking hot sauce he's obsessed with. The barbecue sauce he's obsessed with. Fucking weirdo. Speaking of Facebook, next segment. Area 51 meme invasion. Mike, let me ask you a question quickly before we dive into this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in aliens and extraterrestrial life?
I like to believe in the possibility that we are not alone.
Okay.
So
you want
that's,
to believe.
That's a soft yes.
You're like Fox Mulder.
I want to believe. Okay. My sister has not been kidnapped by aliens like Fox Mulder.
Right.
But I do want to believe.
Okay. AJ, what about you?
Yeah, my logic is kind of the same. I feel like if the universe is so large and expansive and never ending,
right,
there has to be something else out there.
Surely.
Mathematically. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it can't just be us. There has to be something. Someone.
I'm sort of in the middle here. Like, I've had points in my life where I believed in aliens. And where I was scared of aliens, actually,
because
I was like, these motherfuckers are going to come down here and just own us. We're terrible. And then there have been points in my life where I was like, I don't believe in aliens, point blank, period. I just don't care. There have been points where I'm like, I'm indifferent. I don't know, one way or the other. I don't know where I sit right now. I think I'm indifferent. I don't really care. But also, it would be incredibly entertaining if we had some type of alien situation come into the forefront of the universe. Obviously, this is one of the crazy, weird things that we have to wrestle with as human beings. Are we the highest form of life in the universe? Are we the only form of life that's organizing in societies like right. we are? And whether or not there is intelligent life out there is something that has been a widely debated topic since humans, you know, came out of the caves back in the day. This past week, aliens have jumped back to the hottest point in pop culture possible as a result of a Facebook event. It's obviously fake, or it was fake. It's obviously a joke, or it was a joke. I don't know anymore.
There's so many of these like fake joke Facebook events
yeah.
that attract so many crazy people that they become real.
This one is the worst ever
right.
example, yeah. It started out, it just says, Storm Area 51, they can't stop all of us. Which is true, I guess, unless they can. It's like a photo of Area 51, Nevada, and then that's it. It gives you the address in the zip code of Area 51. It's 20908. And then It says, details, we will all meet up at the Area 51 Alien Center tourist attraction. I don't even know if that's an actual thing. It doesn't sound like an actual thing. And coordinate our entry. If we Naruto run, that's a, yeah. This is, I had to look it up.
I saw that too. Yeah.
It's some type of anime deal.
Yeah. You know Naruto, right?
Yeah, no, I'm familiar.
I'm not going to get into it. He runs real fast.
If we run like a cartoon character,
yes.
We can do this,
yes.
Guys.
We can move faster than their bullets, this person says. Then it ends with, let's see them aliens, which reminds me of, we want the gold. Show me the gold, or whatever from the fucking Leprechaun back in the day. Let's see them aliens. The craziest shit is, like, so it started picking up steam. We all saw last week how it went. It was up to, like, 200,000 people on, like, Thursday or Friday or some shit. It was hilarious, and it's like, haha. It's over 1 million people now, and it's over 1 million people committed to going. Now, obviously, 1 million people are not actually going to show up to Air Force or to Area 51 and storm Area 51. That being said, you have to imagine a lot of some people will. A large group of people probably will, maybe, I don't know. 911,000 additional human beings have expressed interest in participating.
They're going to be like those people in that scene in Independence Day where they go up to the top of the roof to party.
Yes.
With the aliens.
Yes.
And then they're going to get wiped out.
And then it's just, yeah. They're the first ones gone.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah.
We've been waiting for you. The whole building's fucking gone.
You know what's going to happen? Did you ever play the Area 51 arcade game?
Yes,
it was,
dude.
Like a shooting game. And you go through Area 51, yeah. And the aliens are coming
Bro,
at you.
I had that.
You just gotta blast them.
I had that.
That's
on
exactly how it's gonna be.
I had that on a Gateway computer.
Gateway. Like,
remember the one that came in a cow box?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got one of them shits. Fucking ridiculous.
It was tight.
Area 51 was my favorite game for like 2 years.
It was fun.
Of life.
They had that game at pinballs.
They have it at Area 51 too. You can play
in real life.
They really have
in real life.
Pinballs and
yeah,
all.
Yeah. Oh,
pinballs.
Sure.
Can we get like a 2 hour pass for me and AJ and Mike to come in and play some fucking pinball?
Well, no, I like your idea of just going there and playing in real life.
And Area 51. Just
bring our own pistols.
To Area 51? That's how you get lasered in the face.
You know what I'm worried about? If people go there and they break in and let the aliens out, well, now we have aliens among us. That's a bigger problem.
That's your concern?
Dude, they're already here, man.
You know what I mean? No, I mean, like, they'll be out in society,
dude,
among us.
You never seen Men in Black? They've been out in society.
Yeah. You'll go get your hair cut and there'll be an alien in there.
She probably already is an alien. That's
why
she's
to get a fade.
That's why she's so good at cutting my hair. Every gas station employee in America is an alien, and everybody knows that.
That is a true statement.
So Area 51 is obviously the area of the United States in, what is it? New Mexico? Nevada?
Nevada.
Oh, it's Nevada.
Nevada.
It's near Las Vegas.
It's a United States Air Force facility. Commonly referred to as Area 51, a highly classified remote detachment of Edwards Air Force Base within the Nevada Test and Training Range. Okay, according to the CIA, the correct names for the facility are Homie Airport. What? Like for the homies?
What's up, homie?
I'm very confused. And then Groom Lake. I don't know why the fuck those are the two names the CIA would prefer. We all call it Area 51. You're aware of this, right? The CIA document from the Vietnam War that was released that refers to it as Area 51 is the reason we all call it Area 51. So y'all can't switch it up now. Nobody is calling it the Homie Airport Invasion. It's Area 51.
I kind of want to call it that now.
Homies. The facility has also been referred to as Dreamland and Paradise Ranch, among other nicknames. Very cool. The U.S. Air Force Public Relations has referred to it as an operating location near Groom Dry Lake. So they're very inconspicuous about it. Like, they look, the government has never tried to come out and say or be clear about, like, there are no fucking aliens here, there's no special technology, there's no, like, if anything, like, it's always been like this mysterious element of the United States that Area 51 could be a thing. And of course, over the course of the years, we mentioned the movie Independence Day earlier. In Independence Day, for example, when Will Smith, like, punches out that alien and then drags him across the desert, eventually where they end up is, like, an Area 51-style facility, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was specifically Area 51 in the
movie.
I
don't remember, but Area 51 is huge in pop culture.
Yes.
Like, the whole, like, Stargate franchise.
Yes.
Like, everything takes place at Area 51. Yeah.
It has always been a huge part of pop culture. It is the center of the alien conspiracy world is Area 51, basically, in Roswell, New Mexico, yeah. And like all the
Those are the two. I got about Roswell.
Those are the two you hear about.
Roswell, yeah.
Area 51, Roswell, New Mexico.
I've been to Roswell.
No shit.
Yeah, my wife loves all this shit.
Oh, what?
She's been to Area 51, but I have not been.
What?
But she took me to Roswell for sure.
What was Roswell like?
It's a sad little town, but there are some really fun gift shops and diners all decked out just in alien stuff. It's pretty corny.
I bet they promote the hell out of that.
Oh, they really
do. Straight alien everything.
You know, there's like museums of the weird and stuff, yeah.
Up until this point, I wasn't really concerned. It like hadn't crossed my mind that possibly one of the three of us could be an alien. But Mike, now that you've mentioned going to Roswell, I feel like we got at least a 20% chance one of us is.
I'm from Texas.
Uh-huh. That's what I would say if I was an alien, too. That's what I would say if I was an alien, too.
I'm American.
Yeah.
I am a human being.
I cannot believe... Let's see them aliens. I cannot believe a million people have committed to this. So Air Force spokeswoman Laura McAndrews declined to elaborate on specific details of the military's plans to deal with this...
She's like, we're not going to shoot people, but we're going to shoot people.
Yeah. Stay home, but don't worry too much, but stay home or you'll die. She said the U.S. Air Force always stands ready to protect America and its assets. That sounds like a threat. It's a threat. I'm not going based on that quote. She said Area 51 is an open training range for the U.S. Air Force, and we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area where we train American armed forces.
Now, do you think they'll think twice about just mowing down a swarm of people that try to invade this base?
They're trying to see them aliens. It's one thing is get push.
They'll use actual bullets. They'll probably use just other tactics like rubber bullets,
gas.
You know, yeah, gas. You know,
what else do they?
I don't know if they're actually gonna like.
So you think they're coming out like riot gear and that they're gonna?
Yeah.
Do you really think a mob is going to form?
They're just gonna be like, guys, if you leave, we'll buy you all pizza. It'll be fine.
This is the problem. Is it like 100 people that show up?
Yeah.
You know, like 100 psychos?
Is still like a good little amount of people, though.
Or is it like 10,000? Because then that's an actual problem. Like,
that's a huge problem.
Then we get into a situation where, AJ, it becomes a concern that there will be some type of like, it's an Air Force base. It doesn't matter that it's rumored that aliens are there. If you go and attempt to storm any Air Force base,
that's the problem.
The same thing happens. And it turns out they don't like that. The whole point of a Air Force base is to keep other people out. And they're going to obviously be ready to defend their fucking area. So, all of this is to say, it doesn't fucking matter. The whole event is stupid. It's a joke. The entirety of this news story is just ridiculous and funny. The part of it that matters and that will last forever is the memes. And my God, we haven't seen a meme explosion like the Area 51 alien memes that are now gracing every form of social media that exists since moth memes. It's been that long.
I remember moth memes.
Now, moth memes, in many cases, are still alive.
There's an RBP segment about moth memes.
There are corners of the internet in which moth memes are still the most highly respected form of meme, and we still, on occasion, put up a good moth meme on our Instagram page. That being said, moth memes are very much a thing of the past. Now is the time for Area 51 memes, because they can't stop all of us. And we can move faster than their bullets. What? Who typed that? Dude, if you go read the CNN column about this, like, these six memes illustrate why storming Area 51 is a terrible idea. This is one of like 1,000 columns published in the last 3 days, because that's the beauty of this. Once you get a situation like the meme situation with the aliens that we've seen unfold over the past few days, you have no choice but as a company or an internet company that focuses on advertising revenue and that makes their money through advertising revenue, you have no choice but to participate in the clickbait storm that takes over the internet.
Oh, yeah. That's a marketing blessing.
You have to participate.
It just falls into your lap. You have to take advantage of that.
So that's how you end up with, like, serious fucking journalists like Leah Azmalash and Nadeem Muadi. I don't know who either of these people are, but they're CNN writers. Working on meme columns instead of actual news.
They're like, what has my career come to?
This is how it happens.
I'm posting memes.
In this column, in the breakdown, the first subheader reads, "You'll probably die." That's the subheader CNN came up with. The next one says, "If you survive, you'll have to finesse a smooth getaway." And that's where the...
Is that E.T.?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's where the E.T. memes bike. Start to come in. The bike, the E.T. bike... it just goes from there. Look, it takes a lot for me to buy into one of these meme movements. Most of the time, I'm not a huge meme guy. Memes are a very strange form of comedy and humor. I respect them and appreciate them in some cases. In others, they're too weird for me. They usually go 2-3 degrees too far into the internet for me to fully understand what the shit is happening. And that's from an internet dude. Like, I'm online all day, every day. So there's other people who don't use the internet as heavily as I do who don't understand how these work at all.
Right.
So you'll see all these people on Facebook like, what the fuck is the deal with all these alien photos and captions or whatever? For a lot of you, you're just thinking in too much into it. Like, a lot of people are like, I don't get the joke because they're thinking the joke is some complicated catch-all. It's not. It's just that morons planned on storming Area 51, and now we're all making Alien and Area 51 jokes. That's it. That's the most complicated level you need to be at in order to enjoy these fucking memes.
Yeah. It's not a complicated story to understand the memes.
Yo.
Well, you know, most memes, they don't require, like, a high level of thought.
No.
It's usually just as stupid as you think it is.
Yes, but people overthink it. They try to think it's like this more complicated, oh, I have to get some joke. No, in most cases, you absolutely do not. It is literally written. The words are there.
People
it's very
are like,
simple.
This has to be deeper and more interesting because there's so much of it, right? Nope.
Yes. Nope.
No.
It's just that. One of my favorite Area 51 memes, I should say. I don't think I can pick a favorite. It's like saying my favorite movie ever. It's all right. You know the one with like the knights? They're standing around the table and they're all putting their swords into the middle, like they're holding their swords out into
like
the middle.
King Arthur
there's,
or something.
There's three of them, yeah. And one of them says people that believe in alien. The next one says people that don't believe in aliens. And the next one says aliens disguised as humans searching for their lost brothers on Earth. And they're all sticking their swords. And in the middle it says storming Area 51.
Nice.
So all those people have come together now. People that believe in aliens, people that don't believe in aliens, and then aliens disguised as humans searching for their lost brothers on Earth. So a lot of the jokes around Area 51 revolve around the fact that, or the, I guess not fact, the theory that there are aliens inside Area 51 waiting to be broken out.
Right.
That makes me think of one of my favorite memes, which was a photo of an alien sitting in a bedroom on his phone.
Yes.
And the caption was like, aliens waiting for that we outside text.
Yeah, I got one to say. The alien I stole from Area 51 showing up in my room at 3 a.m. to tell me he threw up. And it's just a little like a shadow of an alien standing in a doorway. Like a little kid would be like, Mom, I threw up. Except it's the alien you picked up from Area 51. Yeah, here's the one of the aliens at Area 51 waiting on the we outside text. He's sitting in bed in a full outfit with his phone in his hand and his fucking sunglasses on. I mean, it's just, you didn't even know this many photos of aliens existed or fake aliens existed.
They're real.
Well, that and then people are also creating these that fast.
It's outrageous, bro. This one says Area 51 is trending on Twitter, aliens, and then it's just Kawhi saying, what it do, baby? Oh, my God. But there's a million of them, dude. Every good Instagram meme account that exists is balls deep in the... can I give a shout out to one, by the way?
Sure.
At Grape Juice Boys. That's my favorite meme account on Instagram. They're hilarious. They make I believe they're all original. To my knowledge, they're all original. Oh my God, at Grape Juice Boys on Instagram, it has been killing the Area 51 shit. I've been dying laughing. If you're still struggling, if you're like, I still don't get it or I can't get into it, look, follow Grape Juice Boys and give it like a few days of looking at each one they post and reminding yourself it's the simplest version. It's simple. I don't have to overthink it, Jim. There's nothing complicated to it. It's just the joke. Enjoy them. And I bet your understanding of memes will come to be. And then you'll be able to laugh with the rest of us.
School yourself.
Yeah. Any other Area 51? This is ridiculous. Don't storm Area 51.
No, you're not going?
I'm not going.
Oh, okay.
I desire...
No, I'm not going either.
You're not
look,
going?
As much as I would love to see them aliens, I also would love to maintain my life. To remain living and breathing. This isn't the way I want to go out. Like getting... taking a rubber bullet to the forehead or storming Area 51 with a bunch of dorks.
You think that will take you out?
Yeah, that's all I need. One rubber bullet to the forehead, I'm done, son. It's over. It's Dunsky.
It's very put on your tombstone. He just wanted to save the aliens.
Did you know Area 51 was used to test high altitude spy planes during the Cold War?
That's what they want you to
that
think.
That is what they want you to think. That's the kind of statement the government makes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
sure it was. You fuckers. Enjoy the Area 51 memes, though. That is the hottest thing on the internet right now, and I could not be happier. Another new sponsor alert, RBP203, is also brought to you by Raycon.
Ooh.
New sponsor. It's 2019. Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. But before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from our new sponsor, Raycon. Raycon earbuds, R-A-Y-C-O-N, started about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing. The company was actually co-founded by Ray J, who hit it first. And celebrities like Cardi B and J.R. Smith and Snoop Dogg are already obsessed. Raycon's E50 wireless earbuds have totally changed the game for me. They're incredibly comfortable, easy to take anywhere, and unlike some of your other wireless options, they're both stylish and discreet. No dangling wires or stems or any other weird unnecessary shit popping off of there. Too many of y'all are like AJ once was, using wired headphones still. Like my dad still is to this day, by the way. Dad, it's time for me to get you some Raycons. And of course, they don't just look great, they sound great too. And Raycon offers their wireless earbuds for everyone in a range of fun colors and at an unbeatable price. They're a game changer. Game changer. The most dope, the most affordable. Love them. Go to buyraycon.com/Ross. BUYRAYCON.com/Ross. You'll get 15% off your order. That's buyraycon.com/Ross for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. If you've been eyeing a pair, now is the time to get an amazing deal. One more time, buyraycon.com/Ross. Next segment. Reviewing Aziz Ansari's right now. So Aziz Ansari's first stand-up special since becoming one of the many famous people wrapped up in the Me Too movement came out last... Was it last week? I think it was last week.
Well, actually, first, before you get into it, have we all seen it? I know I've seen it. Ross has seen it. Did you watch it, Mike?
No.
Or do you even care to watch it at all?
I mean, I don't know.
Or about him
That's
as
a
comedian?
No. That's a no.
That's a no.
That's a fair
I mean,
no.
I used to like him. I'm a little... I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Well, let's talk. Don't be afraid to talk about it, Mike.
Okay.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I am somewhere in between now.
Okay.
I'm a historically huge Aziz Ansari fan.
Sure.
I've seen him 3 or 4 times live.
You're here in Austin,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I've seen him at the Paramount a couple times downtown. And I'm a big fan. I love Parks and Rec.
Me too.
What else has he done that I love? Man, everything in his career.
Master of None.
Master of None was great. I haven't watched season 2, but season 1 was fantastic.
So good.
There's just too much good TV. He's great. He's I've loved him his entire career. And as a stand-up, I have respected him a great deal. I don't think there's anybody in the world I respect more than, like, my favorite stand-up comedians. Those are the people that are, like, that's who I look up to. That's who what inspires me to try to be better at what I do and try different shit. And he's definitely an example of one that is in my, like, top 5 that I respect. So, in 2018, the now-defunct website babe.net published a woman's account of an upsetting date that she had had with Aziz a few months prior, where she alleges that he pressured her repeatedly and aggressively for sex and says that she'd later come to view the encounter as an assault.
Yeah.
She believed she was sexually assaulted. So, of course, there was a knee-jerk condemnation of Aziz for being gross and creepy and predatory.
He got Me Too.
He did. And people obviously went after her, too. A totally different group of people saying that she was basically overreacting to nothing more than a bad date. And this is the way of the world in 2018, 2019. If you get outed for something like this, it then becomes public, knowledge to debate it and figure out whether or not you're guilty or whatever. And it takes a while.
Well, especially if you're someone as high profile as him, you know. If you think about it, this happens a lot. I talked about this before. This happens a lot in college towns all across America. To where, you know, kids go out to the bar and get drunk, and the same situation happens with a lot of other girls. Unfortunately,
oh, for sure, yeah. But when you're a celebrity,
yeah. But when you're a celebrity, you're under a spotlight,
deal,
obviously.
For sure, so. No, absolutely. I mean, it is,
but it is a bigger issue that needs to be.
It is a completely, you know, completely different deal. When you become a famous person at the level of like Aziz Ansari, it's a different set of rules. You no longer work in the real world in the normal situation that normal people do. That you don't have like the innocent until proven guilty really anymore, especially in any of these Me Too matters. In fact, yeah, in a lot of cases, it does feel like it's vice versa. In the case of Aziz, the way he sort of handled it was to slip out the back almost. sort of he did. Like he just disappeared.
Yeah.
For a while. I think his and I'm not condemning that move, by the way. I don't think it's fair to condemn him for disappearing. That's the way he chose to deal with it. I mean,
did he literally disappear? Like he wasn't doing any shows,
not
he wasn't
really
working on anything, or
not really.
He just took some time for himself.
Yes. Because okay. He wanted time to process what had occurred, and I think for himself, even as he talks about it, he addresses it in the stand-up special. It's sort of like he needed time to sit back and think through, did I do something wrong?
That, I think, is the right approach.
Which is, yes.
Not necessarily shutting down, but taking a step back and taking stock of the event.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, one way or the other. And it's not about defending yourself, mm-hmm. necessarily. It's about figuring it out for yourself so that you can know.
So you can know and you can learn, you can move on. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the most important thing to keep in mind here. If you're not Aziz Ansari or the woman that was affected by his actions or otherwise, look, everybody is just trying to get better at this point. It's very, very clear there was a huge, huge gap in operating for years and years and years and years and years. Things were not as they should have been. They still aren't. They maybe never will be, because we're terrible human beings. But we're making somewhat of an adjustment, right? Like, there's an adjustment taking place within society to take power away from men. An unnecessary amount of power was given to men, especially white men, for an enormous amount of time, and that is an inarguable facet of fucking society. You cannot argue that. That
Agreed.
Is the case.
Agreed.
It is being corrected at this point in an interesting way, in many different interesting ways, in fact, in all across the society, and this is just one of them. And I found it strange. First of all, I didn't hear about Aziz's Me Too deal for months after it took place.
Yeah, same here.
Because he's not a white guy. That's why. Nobody cares. Yeah. It's fucking sad, but it's true.
Like, in all seriousness.
Yes, and I don't mean that to be offensive.
It's what it is.
If it is offensive, it's what it is, man. If he had been a white comedian, it would have gotten reported on a lot more.
Yeah. Arguably, it didn't seem as, maybe a lot of people felt it wasn't as egregious as something like compared to what Louis C.K. was doing.
Also that.
Yeah. Bill Cosby.
His situation was such that it made it very easy for people to be like, now, hold on. Mm-hmm. What if he didn't do anything wrong? Which is the case in it, especially for men. It's your automatic reaction to a lot of the Me Toos. It's like, that could be horse shit. She could just be making it up or whatever. And that's sort of the point. Is it not? Like, women forever were shut down and destroyed by that exact fucking rebuttal.
Right.
Yeah.
This bitch is full of it. That's all you had to say for like 80 years in America. Not anymore. That's the point. Right? The point is that women are now feel comfortable speaking up and defending themselves and talking when injustice occurs.
I would say more comfortable. Generally.
Yes,
yeah. A lot of women still won't speak because they will get so much pushback, but it's lessening, I think.
Right.
Like I said, that happens a lot in college.
For sure.
This happens a lot in college towns, and these girls won't say anything.
You make a great point, Mike. It's none of this is like permanently changed anything. It's all flux, right? It's all fluid. It's like we're working towards the more perfect scenario in which women feel more comfortable. And surely everything that has occurred so far with the Me Too movement has made some women feel more comfortable, and others are probably still. It's a circumstantial situation. But all this is to say with Aziz, in his stand-up special, he comes out and sort of half addresses what happened in the first like 10-15 minutes. And basically the way he describes it, first of all, it would make me believe that he believes he didn't do anything wrong, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I think that's
the feeling that you got from
it? I think he thought through the entire situation and he sees it as he didn't do anything wrong. Now, whether or not that is correct doesn't really matter, because through his, I'm doing air quotes, apology, he never apologized, I thought it became abundantly clear that he believed this to be an example of somebody trying to take advantage of him.
Right.
He didn't come out and say that. he didn't come out and accuse the woman of lying or of trying to take advantage or of trying to make money or anything like that. But he also did not apologize, really. All he said is that it made him feel terrible and that it gave him a ton of time to think through his life. And one of his best friends told him, man, your situation made me think through every date I've ever been on.
Yeah.
And that he saw that as a positive.
Sure.
And that overall, in his whispery kind of talking way, he sees it as a positive. And that's sort of the takeaway from his stand-up special.
So you didn't view it all as an acceptance of guilt? By him saying that, yeah, this really embarrassed me. I felt humiliated. Like,
if you don't say, I am sorry for what I did, you are not accepting guilt. And he didn't say, I'm sorry, or say what he did.
Well, no, he just kind of vaguely danced around the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of poked fun at it.
It sounds like he's chalking it up to we had different perspectives about the event. Yeah.
Which, dude?
Let me ask you this.
I'm sure it's the case.
Do you feel like he would have been better off just tackling it head on, just full out, like, hey, this is what happened. This is what I did. I'm sorry.
No.
Nah.
Like, do you feel like he would have benefited?
Into some legal issues there, probably.
Also, yeah, that's the problem. The from a celebrity standpoint, I believe, having thought through this scenario with Aziz a lot, if you were in his shoes and you are accused of a Me Too moment, even if you believe 1,000% this woman is completely full of it, I didn't do anything wrong, you look like a total piece of shit if you come out and accuse them of making it up for the sake of publicity or whatever. Like, there is no way to spin that correctly.
No.
You do not come out and deny the other human being their ability to accuse you of something. You don't. You can't as a celebrity. It backfires horribly. So I think he was caught somewhere between like wanting to full-fledged come out and defend himself and any type of admission of guilt. And what we got is like this weird half version, which is like, it's not funny. And he comes off as sort of like broken and bitter and annoyed.
Yeah, to me it sounded like a broken man just kind of, you know, having a raw and honest conversation with an audience.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, this is what's on my mind. This is how I feel right now. Which, you know, is probably why it's called Right Now.
Yes.
It's very present in the moment.
For sure.
Kind of put it out there.
It's funny. It's like Dave Chappelle's most recent handful of comedy specials he did for Netflix.
So good, by the way.
A lot of them are more conversational, more casual. And I think that sort of has evolved, like that sort of more casual nature to your stand-up set has sort of become like a hot thing you can do right now. And Aziz runs with it, too. What's it? It's directed by somebody like super famous, like Spike Jonze or.
Yeah, I forgot his name.
Wow, man, what the hell? I'm gonna come up with it.
By the way, what'd you think about that? The way it was filmed.
I like.
It's very different.
I like the
unorthodox camera shot.
It is
angle.
Directed by Spike Jonze. I was right. Holy shit!
That's why I felt so artsy.
Look at the big brain on Bill on a Monday. How about that? Yes, it is.
I feel like watching an indie movie for a little bit.
I like that some of these stand-ups are doing more creative shit with their shows, their specials, their camera work, the way they film this stuff.
It's time to kind of elevate that form, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I think that became the case like within the last couple of years, and people have really started to look into what other stuff they can do. I thought like Neil Brennan's Three Mics, for example, was an incredibly creative way to do it.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, it's so
I've heard nothing
good,
but,
bro.
You know, rave reviews about it.
You got to watch it. You got to watch it. But yeah, so there's like unorthodox camera angles, and there's a guy standing 3 feet from Aziz on stage with a giant camera that he introduces at the beginning. He's like, this guy's supposed to be up here with me or whatever. he's still funny, man. Like, don't get me wrong. Aziz is very funny. I just thought it was a strange mood to come out with and execute an entire special with. He keeps whispering. He'll be talking about the way something occurred, and then he'll sort of like break it down to like
a real soft ASMR.
You're like, bro, why are you gonna tell a joke? What the fuck is going on? You're whispering up there.
Now, while you're talking about that, how do you feel about this new style compared to his old wacky, high energy, goofy delivery?
I'll be real. I started to slip out on Aziz in the last few years because this dude was too happy go lucky for me. He's a little too energetic and happy,
a little
and
too
like
wiry,
you know, when somebody is just never unhappy, like one of those people who's just a never ending shining beacon of humanity.
Yeah, I don't really like being around people like that.
I don't like being around.
It's just too much.
You know who reminds me of that? That I'm sort of getting that vibe from now is Chris D'Elia. I'm like, yeah. Hey, man.
But he's one of my favorite comics, though.
Yeah, I love him. He's like, one of my favorite
comics. Yeah, he's one of my top.
But I'm like, dude, actually. Get some fucking problems. It's part of his most recent set, in fact. He opens discussing how most comedians are these broken, addicted, horribly, you know, problem-riddled yeah. people. And he's never had a single problem his whole fucking life.
Dude, I walked into my doctor's office the other day, and on the TV in the lobby, they were playing a Chris D'Elia special, but unedited and, like, super loud.
Wow.
And I'm like, somebody put this in.
It's a very progressive doctor.
Deliberately. And there's, like, old people there, like...
I'll thoroughly enjoy that.
This shouldn't be happening.
Dude, at least you weren't reading, like, a home fucking goods magazine from 2014 or whatever.
I mean, it was fun. I enjoyed it, but I just thought it was wildly inappropriate.
Yeah, that does sound wildly inappropriate. I saw him at the ACL Live, a few months back. Mm. Unbelievably funny.
Do you ever check out his podcast, by the way?
I've watched a lot of it on Instagram, so I don't listen to it.
It's just him rambling.
Yeah, yeah.
He just gets on the mic and just talks. Mm. So I don't even know if he has a plan for what he wants to say.
Chris is an example of one of those guys where he's never had, like, he had a great home life. Yeah. He's never touched alcohol or drugs of any kind. He's, like, 6'4" and has the body of an underwear model and, like, jokes about that. And, like, he does not fit the normal comedian mold.
Right.
Anyway, he's hilarious. But I don't know where we were going with that or what my original comparison was. Oh, so Aziz used to be like too happy-go-lucky for me, and now he's sort of like had the world beat him down a little bit. Mm. But almost too much. He feels sort of bitter. And like he's like, now I'm like, oh God, I thought this would be something that would make me more relatable or make him more relatable to me again, not necessarily fact that he went through controversy.
We'll see another evolution of him after the reaction to the special gets out. You know?
Probably.
Yeah.
He said at one point in the special, the old disease is dead. Mm. Or like he was like, the old disease, he's dead now. So I guess going forward, this is going to be his new stand-up approach.
I don't know. If I had to guess, we will likely see more adjustments in his strategy and his style moving forward.
If I can bring up a couple things, he did bring up two, I guess, like messages or lessons that I think that are important. Remember when he brought up his grandmother with Alzheimer's?
Yeah.
And he was just talking about being in the moment, being present. And obviously with her having Alzheimer's, she has no choice but to permanently be in the present, be in the moment.
Yeah.
And so... remember he had the whole crowd like close your eyes.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, or this might have been earlier in the special.
He did more meaningful series.
Yeah, yeah. Though. He involved the crowd a lot more and he was like, think of like your favorite memory or something like that. And then just had them like meditate, I guess, for a second.
It was interesting. It's like he brought, I mean, I already mentioned three mics, but Neil Brennan combined beautifully the conversations of like mental health and depression and substance abuse and stuff with comedy, which is the whole purpose of this show. And Aziz did a lot of that. Like there was more serious conversational stuff in his stand-up special, and he literally was conversing with the audience at several different points. So like you said, AJ, it wasn't like the funniest stand-up you've ever seen, but it was impactful.
Oh, and he brought up something else that you advocate, which is calling your people.
No shit.
Spending time with your parents, having meaningful conversations with your parents because...
I'm like halfway through.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you had more.
Full disclosure. Okay. No, I'm halfway through the special, so I haven't seen that
before. Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you finished the whole thing.
Nah, man.
Over here jumping around.
I was a little too high when I sat down to watch this. Yes, of course.
He brings up something that we talk about all the time, which is calling your people. And he brings up the fact that your parents are only going to be alive for so much longer, right?
Right.
You know, especially us at our age, like our parents. He was like, your parents only have maybe 20 years left, if that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he was like, if you only go see your parents once a year, he did the math and he was like, this equals X amount of times that you're going to see your parents before they're gone forever.
I don't want
to
do that.
It panned to the crowd and they're all just like, whoa, like I didn't even realize that.
Dude, there's a few moments where he would like say shit and then he would sit there and like, it was basically him being like, react. And then they'd show the crowd, and it was like, this is awkward. We all thought we were going to laugh. We're not laughing. We're talking about serious shit. He handled it very well, I'll say that. Considering what it was one of the more awkward stand-up specials I've ever watched, in terms of execution and in terms of what you expect, Aziz Ansari is not the dude I expected to get up there and take a more serious angle. Even if it was, in my opinion, not the most perfect version of it, and he didn't really apologize for what happened, I can't say that's right or wrong because I don't know what happened.
Yeah, fair enough.
And honestly, dude, if he didn't do anything and he feels it's between him and whatever you believe, no matter what, you got to believe there's some form of like justice in the world, right? Whether it's in death or whether it's in life or whatever it is that you believe, I've got to believe that there is some form of justice in life and that it's between him and that form of justice at this point. It's not on me to judge. All right. He came out. He addressed it in a way that is apparently the most he's going to address it. And that's sort of it. Right. You have to decide what you think about what he said, whether it was enough, whether you think he turned it into a positive. Like, did you see? You have to watch the whole special all the way through, which I haven't done yet, and decide, was this a positive addition to the conversation or not? I think that's how you judge it.
I think I do need to watch it because I really do enjoy his work. Season 2 of Master of None was fucking amazing.
Damn.
And I'm not surprised that he went serious in this special considering what happened and considering a lot of the episodes of Season 2 of Master of None were deeper and more serious.
Yeah.
And they're really good. I want to like him again. So I think I will have to watch this and figure out where to go with him.
Did you abandon ship because of the Me Too thing specifically?
Kind of, just because women around me were, and I defaulted to them, you know?
Sure.
And they were like, let's cool off on him for a while. I'm like, okay.
He wasn't like fully hashtag canceled.
No,
but
he
was like postponed.
Yeah. It was like, more like, let's see how this shakes out.
Let's back off and see what happens with Aziz.
Right. Let's not like high five, yeah, Aziz is cool anymore. Like, right. We'll see how it shakes out.
Yes.
You know, ironically, we didn't touch on this. In Master of None, he actually touches on a lot of these topics regarding women dealing with men like this.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book. He wrote that romance book.
Dude, I totally
remember that?
Forgot about that. Yeah. He wrote about like modern dating and the way technology affects it and shit.
And then this happens. So it's just kind of ironic that, you know.
I mean, I think, honestly, I think that's part of where the bitterness comes from for him, is he was trying to position himself as one of these, like, woke, which he makes a shit ton of fun of white people in this stand-up episode for our wokeness and how we compete on the woke scale, which is very fair and very funny to me. Sure. And, like, as somebody who does some of it, I would never consider myself to be woke or use that word in a serious fashion. But we obviously talk about shit on this show that's serious in an effort to sort of better the world. And that's that vibe, and I get making fun of that. It's funny to me, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he got into all that shit, dude. Like, he was... It was a good special.
Did you get to the part
executed
where...
Executed in a strange way.
Did you get to the part where he was talking about R. Kelly and Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
And just about the fact that...
Like, those guys are worse than me.
About the fact that we don't...
Yeah,
about the fact that we as a society, we don't accept truths unless they're presented in documentary form, which is something that you talked about before in an earlier episode.
Yeah. That's
the horrible thing about society nowadays.
We've hit a... dude, by the way, speaking of documentary form, the newest... I can't remember if it's on HBO or Netflix, but it's like, I Love You, Now Die...
Oh, fuck. Did you watch that?
No.
Is it out yet?
Yes.
Oh, I want to see
What's that about?
Okay, it's about the girl who convinced her boyfriend to commit suicide through text message or whatever, like
yeah, her,
3 years ago.
How long ago was that? I think I heard about that.
Last year.
It was big news
last
at the
year?
Time,
it was really...
Damn, I thought it was 3 or 4 years
ago. Not too far away, yeah.
Well, anyway, it's a very, very, very serious, crazy, depressing, dark, horrible case that they break down. I believe there's two cases they break down. Maybe there's a part two or some shit. It doesn't matter.
You said it's on HBO?
It is on HBO, yeah.
Yes.
HBO?
Okay, thank you. I got 10 minutes in, and I was like, I can't.
Wow.
Dude, too many things I'm watching right now are dark and serious.
I was hoping you would talk about this on OCC.
Listen, I will watch this and talk about it.
Take the hit.
I just can't do it in the middle of Stranger Things, Dark, Big Little Lies. Like, I've got too much drama on my plate already. Right. I need some time. And then...
You got to balance it out with something happy.
It is heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And super fucked up.
And for people like us, maybe it's a little hard to watch.
Yeah, it is. It is a little hard to watch. Like, I don't... There's... Watching somebody that suffers from mental illness stuff go horribly downhill and then have it end in death.
Yeah.
That's really hard.
I was going to ask you, I guess both of you guys, like, how do you deal with watching stuff like that, and does it take any toll on you?
I watch
after consuming that.
Much less depressing stuff, especially when it's, you know, a documentary and real, right. You know, and you know it's going to end so horribly. Like, I find this case fascinating just to get into the psyche of this person who perpetrated this crime. But the story of this kid is just so sad. I'm not sure if I can watch it. Yeah.
Since we're on this topic, I watched a documentary on Netflix called How to Die in Oregon.
In Oregon?
Yeah, it's basically about how Oregon has this law about self-assisted suicide. You know, if you're terminally ill,
okay,
that you can take the pills or do whatever to kill yourself to, mm-hmm. you know, relieve the pain or whatever. And it follows a few people, but it follows this one lady.
Oh, it's called the Death with Dignity Act, the first law in the U.S. to allow physicians to prescribe lethal doses of drugs to the terminally ill.
Yes. So I watched that, and that is one of the toughest documentaries I've ever watched, because you follow this lady who is terminally sick. And you follow her journey as she's getting sicker and sicker. And she actually follows through with the suicide at the end.
Oh, wow.
And you watch it. Like, you watch the whole thing.
Dude.
Like, you watch her get her family together. And she, like, takes the pills and, like, commits suicide.
Oh, I'm not trying to watch that.
Dude,
it was brutal. After I watched that, I was like, I can't. Yeah. I gotta do something to cleanse my palate.
Ah,
like,
nice Sunday documentary.
That really took a toll on me after watching.
I almost cried at the new Lion King trailer, so I will not be watching. Yeah, that. But yeah, that'll destroy me.
What day are you supposed to watch that documentary?
Dude, I don't know. I watched it late at night one day too. I wouldn't recommend
that
you watch it.
That's some dark shit, bro.
But if you brace yourself and you want to watch it, then it's something to watch.
See, the thing for me is most of my viewing of stuff on TV gets done at night now. Right? When it's dark outside in the evening. And I don't want to end my day on the darkest possible topic. Like, that's not what I want to take my brain into sleepy time with, thinking about that type of shit. Like,
you see her commit suicide.
I'm not trying to watch a woman die on camera, bro.
with her family around.
I didn't even know you could kill yourself in Oregon. What the fuck? I thought we just legalized pot in Oregon. Shouldn't everybody be okay now? God damn, that's some dark shit. But no, documentaries, you got to be careful with your documentary load, because they are real life and because so many of them are incredibly depressing and dark. You really got to be careful there. Aziz, on the other hand, it's a darker comedy. It's not light, this whole stand-up special right now on Netflix. But I found it to be worth a watch.
You know, there's some jokes in there. Like,
yes.
He kind of calls back to his old material a little bit.
And I find if you're an Aziz person, if you were an Aziz fan back in the day, or like maybe you found yourself in a weird position over the past 2 years, or you're like me, where you didn't even hear about his Me Too deal until a few months later, and then it was weird, and now he's gone, and then he's back. I recommend you watch the special, because I thought it was an attempt. I don't think it was perfect at addressing our society and all the different shit that's going on from a guy who just got dragged into the center of it. And one of my points that I was making earlier before I lost my fucking way, as I am wont to do, was that Aziz was building his career toward being that guy. You know, he'd written the relationship book. He'd done Master of None.
Socially progressive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then this fucking destroyed all of the momentum he had built in that direction. Whether or not, right or wrong, it almost doesn't matter. That's why he's so bitter. That's why you get that feeling of like, yo, what's with the attitude almost? It's like, what, bro, why are you being, you're not allowed to have that attitude. You got accused of sexual misconduct. I kind of get it. I can see how that would be incredibly devastating, right or wrong, kind of indifferent.
Well, let me ask you this. In your opinion, how do you think this is going to impact his career going forward?
Oh, he'll be fine.
You think he'll bounce back and it'll just be like normal? Like, he'll go back to doing his
Look,
show?
He's
doing
one of
stand-up like usual?
He's got so many irons in the fire already. And like Tay brought up a point when I was talking about this. She was like, man, it's kind of crazy. Netflix went out on a limb sort of to let him do that special. And I was like, no, they didn't. They already have Master of None. Yeah. He's in the fucking building.
He's part of the Netflix family at this point.
Dude, he's well connected at Netflix. Aziz sits down at tables with important people at Netflix. Mm-hmm. They I'm sure they evaluated.
They're going to take care of their talent.
Sure, but mm-hmm. I'm sure they evaluated whether or not this was a good idea. I'm not saying that Netflix is like some, once you're in, you can do anything. But I'm just saying he was in a good spot to get this done. It's not like they were going to give him a ton of pushback.
Dude, they're giving Adam Sandler money to make all these terrible Ooh. Movies. Like, there's no doubt that they were going to let Aziz do this special.
The craziest shit. I'm still waiting to see one of these Adam Sandler investments not pan out. And it keeps working. I don't understand it. But it turns out all you have to do is throw him a couple hundred million dollars and he will make it happen for you. You'll get the return. The movies are shit, but everyone is watching them.
I've said it before, but I feel like I'm still holding out hope that I feel like at least there's one more movie that he has in the tank in his career that's going to be iconic.
I know.
That's going to kind of cement his legacy.
I kind of like the one he did with Chris Rock. For Netflix, where his daughter's getting married to Chris Rock's son.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that movie. What,
I never
was
watched
called?
That, though.
And I think, wasn't Apatow, Robert Smigel wrote it.
Lights Out?
No, I forgot what it's called. It's about a wedding.
Ironically, I watched a movie called Lights Out over the weekend.
Oh, wow. It was
the
week of.
Yes, the week of.
Sorry.
That one has a bunch of funny little vignettes because it's written by Robert Smigel. He's a really great comedian. He's the guy who... came up with Triumph, the insult comic dog.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's the Triumph guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love him.
So you get all that kind of humor in that movie.
For
it's
me
pretty
to
funny.
Poop on.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Okay, moving on. RBP 203 is also brought to you by Manscaped. If you're using a terrible and incorrect tool with which to trim or groom your pubic region, you are a buffoon. But you should not feel too bad. It's a common issue for men. Most guys straight up do not know what product to use to clean themselves up. For me, in the past, I was one of you buffoons. I would take my old electric facial hair razor and use that as a body hair tool. That's not what it's made for, and that's also disgusting, and you're going to get nicks and cuts and snags. Screw that. You need to let Manscaped come into your life where there's absolutely no fear of hurting your nuts with a nick or a cut or a snag ever again, thanks to their incredible Lawnmower 2.0, which is a rechargeable, waterproof trimmer with skin-safe technology for a nick-free trim. All of the products at Manscaped are specially formulated to cleanse, moisturize, and deodorize. They also offer tools engineered to give every gentleman a close, refined appearance, empowering men by providing the right tools for the right job. Go to manscaped.com today to learn more about their revolutionary products, Manscaped. If you use the code RBP at checkout, you're going to get 20% off your entire order. That's the code RBP. For 20% off your entire order at manscaped.com, Manscaped, your balls will thank you, Bumblebee Tuna. Next and final segment. Russell Westbrook traded to Rockets.
Uh-oh.
So at long last, it is now time for the segment so many of you have been waiting for. Yeah, it is real. Russell Westbrook, also known as the Brody, is now a member of the Houston Rockets as of like Friday. Or actually, I guess it's not technically official yet, but the deal has been done. Less than a week after they agreed to ship Paul George to Los Angeles, the Thunder ended Russell Westbrook's 11-year run in Oklahoma, trading him to the Rockets for Chris Paul, two protected first-round draft picks, and two pick swaps.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Now, the obvious, well, first of all, the reaction, immediate reaction by me was shock.
Yeah, you said you had to sit outside for a minute and kind of process everything. I remember you said that on Twitter.
I'm not joking. There have only been a handful of moments in my life that have shocked me to where I was sitting in like 30 minutes past and I was like, I still haven't moved because I'm in shock. This was weirdly one of them. I thought this had a 5% chance of happening. I knew it was one of the trades that had been thrown out. I knew it was one of the trades that had been mentioned. It was in the rumor mill or whatever. But nothing about this on paper looked like it was going to happen. I didn't think that they would even make the this is not a matchup that you would see on paper and be psyched about as a coach. Having to deal with Westbrook and Harden, they're both very ball-dominant, turnover-happy psychopaths. Offensive power... fucking power players with very little defensive prowess or effort. It is not what you would imagine to be a good idea. In fact, most of the Rockets fans I knew were either indifferent or are just exhausted still from like the season or something, or they were like my dad, where he was like, this is fucked. And but my dad, in all fairness, has thought that about every Rockets trade in the past 15 years. He can't handle the change that Daryl Morey brings with each and every offseason. The thing is, with that shock, I was shocked because I didn't think Morey would actually give it a shot. The fact that he did is incredibly exciting to me. Look, These guys, Daryl Morey and James Harden, have to be shaking their heads at all of you. Like, are you fucking kidding me? We shipped old-ass CP3, one of the worst contracts in the league, and we brought you back Russell Westbrook. You're not even going to notice the fucking draft picks are gone, you losers. Get over it. Stop being such a pussy. What did you want? Did you want to run it back with Chris Paul again, you coward? Seriously, Morey and Harden have to just be like, are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? You, what did you seriously? Chris Paul was unhappy. He hated Harden. Chris Paul is one of the more dislikable human beings that's ever walked around in the NBA. He's also one of the best point guards to ever play the game of basketball. He's hateable. Incredibly hateable. Maybe one of the most hateable players to ever play the game of basketball when he's not on your team. When he's on your team, he's still hateable. He's still, you still find yourself being like, oh, Chris, please stop. Please stop bitching at the refs. Please stop mocking, openly mocking the referees in the middle of the game. Please stop mocking the players on the other team. He's an asshole. He's an asshole. When things have gone wrong with Chris Paul, you have to move on. There is no repairing that situation. Harden and Chris Paul were not going to sit down at a table and come to terms to understand each other and play well in 2020. That was not going to fucking happen. You had to make a move. Who else were you trying to bring back? What did you want? Did you want us to sit and just go into next season the way we did last year and fucking lose again? Did you not see what they just did in LA? It doesn't matter that the Warriors blew up. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are on the Clippers together with everybody else that was there. LeBron James has assembled another weird 2014 dream team in the Lakers, plus Anthony Davis. You needed to make a change, man. You needed to pick up another superstar. You did. He's averaged a triple-double 3 seasons in a row. What the fuck did you want them to do? I'm very frustrated and angry with the reaction to bringing in Westbrook. Yes, it could explode in our faces. Yes, it could fail. Of course. So the fuck what? You have to try. The league is about entertainment. There's nobody more entertaining than Russell Westbrook. I am very appreciative of having both a owner now in Tillman Fertitta who's willing to do insane shit. In some cases, it probably... he needs to be reined in a little bit. I'm psyched to have a GM who's willing to risk his fucking job to bring me entertainment. This dude's going to get fired if this doesn't work. They're going to have to pin it on him. This could finally be the end of Daryl Morey's run in Houston, which is terrifying to me, and yet I am still all for it because I do believe it will work. You don't think we're going to have a winning record and be a top 5 seed in the Western Conference next year with these two motherfuckers running the ball? It's all going to be fine, people. You just got to relax and have a little bit of faith. And more than that, try to enjoy your fucking selves. This is about fun. It's about fun. If you don't have fun watching James Harden and Russell Westbrook run around throwing each other lobs, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? We're not going to win a championship every year. We need to enjoy the other seasons that we don't win a championship. It's been 20 fucking years since we won one. 26 years. What do you want? We can't rebuild every offseason. This is it. This is what you do if you have the means to do it. And we did, so we did. Now we have two superstars again, and one of them's not 40 years old with $60 million due in a couple seasons. Like, this is the move. Enjoy it. This is the opposite of being irrelevant. Bask in the relevancy. I beg you. Enjoy it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
What are your thoughts on Chris Paul making the transition to OKC? How do you think he's going to fare out there? Is he now the man in OKC?
He better be. This is his last season.
I don't know if that's even saying much at this point.
It's his last season or two of being the guy, if he even remains the guy he is right now. I don't know if they'll trade for anybody else. They have like 15 first-round picks in the next 3 years. They're in a good spot. They're in the rebuilding zone, man. They drafted all those guys back in the day, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant. They had one of the best, Sam Presti's had his job since then for a reason, one of the best drafts in history, and then it never really came together the way it needed to.
Well, it's
that
funny
era
because...
only just now ended, though. The Russell Westbrook trade was the end of that era, so this is their first real rebuild ever, not counting Seattle Supersonics. Since the franchise moved, the first rebuild. That's exactly what you want in a GM. You want to avoid rebuilds, people. That's the Daryl Morey genius, is that we've always been able to at least matter. At least we were mediocre, like back in the fucking, you know, Steve Francis, Yao Ming era when things were... at least it was still exciting. You have a good GM. Don't get this man fired.
I never thought that OKC needed a rebuild necessarily. I mean, they could have benefited from maybe another guard or two.
Yeah, but he was – Russ demanded the trade, though. He said, I'm out. I want to go to Houston.
Oh, yeah, obviously, with everything that transpired.
Yeah. So then once
why would you not
want
to go at that point?
You got to do
it. You're like, yo, I'm out.
They, for real, though, they do have a shit ton of draft picks. And if you're a Thunder fan, like, for those – for the record.
The future is bright.
Here's how you know it was a good move. I've had hundreds and hundreds of lifelong Oklahoma City Thunder fans hit me up saying, enjoy Russ. Like, take care of him for us, enjoy it. That is a sign that we got the right guy, okay? Controversy aside, horrible dickhead antics to the media aside, total sociopath on the court aside, this was the move. We're all going to be much better off for it. Daryl Morey for president and vice president 2020. Now we've reached a point in the show where it's time for some very important announcements. First and foremost, you've been saddled with two legal obligations as a result of having listened to this entire podcast. Number one, you have to rate and review this show. We would prefer that you rate and review on Apple Podcasts. I don't know if that even exists on Spotify. I know it doesn't on SoundCloud. 5 stars, 2 or 3 sentences about why you like the show, why you think other people would enjoy it. And that's all you got to do. You're done with the box number one. You can check it and move on to number two, which is to tell one person, whether it's a family member, a friend, a coworker, a neighbor, it doesn't matter. Tell one person about RBP this week. Just share it with any one individual that you think would enjoy the show. Share it with them. Send them the Apple Podcasts and the Spotify link, maybe to your favorite episode, or the Instagram page, if you must, at the Ross Bolin Podcast. Perhaps that would help them get a good idea of the vibe we've got going here, and then they can decide whether or not they would enjoy it. You do those two things, rate and review, tell one person. Those are your legal obligations. You check both boxes. I call off the dogs. We don't have to see each other in court, and we all live long and prosper. We're also on Twitter, at Ross Bolin Pod. We're on Facebook somewhere. Nobody cares. And then you can follow me, Ross Bolin, your host, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, at WRBOLEN, on all three, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Follow me, at WRBolin. Mike, thank you for joining us today, sir.
It was great to be here, yeah.
Always good to have you in the lab. Where can people follow you and hear more from you?
Just at Mike Moody on Twitter. And if anybody listening is a fan of the Watchmen franchise,
ooh,
I have a tiny little baby podcast called Who Pods the Watchmen. New episode dropped today. Check it out.
Oh, yeah? I was going to ask you who watches the Watchmen.
I do.
But I guess you do.
I also pod the Watchmen.
You is the answer.
It is I.
By the way, I'm not asking who watches the Watchmen, like the show or the movie. They say that in the comic book series.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Get it? Because somebody has to watch the Watchmen?
Exactly.
Like who polices the police?
Yeah, because all assholes.
Yeah, you follow. Everybody follows. Be sure to give Who Pods the Watchmen a listen if you're a huge Watchmen fan. AJ, what about you? Where can we follow you and hear more from you?
On Twitter and Instagram, I am at Capital AJ. That's CAPITAL AJ.
Are you going to be making alien memes for us the rest of the day?
I'm not really a meme expert. I know you are.
You're not a spicy meme lord?
You used to be. That was a big chunk of your career early on.
Oh.
Weren't you just cranking out memes?
Nah, it was like a 3-week period. I was stealing them.
Oh, okay.
I never actually created any of my own.
Statue of limitations. You can admit that now.
Yeah, that's right. I listened to that 2 Chainz song. I was stealing them for like, there was a 3-week period or so where I got super, this is the last time I will ever cop to this, by the way. It was a 3-week period where I got super frustrated. This is like 4 or 5 years ago. I got super frustrated with the Fat Jew and Fuck Jerry and the success that they had. And I was like, fuck these two guys.
Yeah.
I'm making a meme account. And I turned my personal Instagram page into a Fuck Jerry style or Fat Jew style meme account.
Oh, no.
Much to the dismay of everyone in the world that knows me. Every single human being who followed me on Instagram was like, what the fuck are you doing?
You actually lost a lot of followers.
I lost followers.
That was a bad move.
I gave up a couple weeks in. It was just, this was just like, dude, I was still figuring out what the deal was with online media, and I was super annoyed with some of the tactics that other people were having success with and how incredibly unfair they were. It was mostly these two dudes were stealing funny people's material off Twitter and Instagram, and they were making a shit ton of money off of
Are they still doing that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Jerry has his whole...
That's still very much part of their brand?
Fuck Jerry built a whole marketing company that works for Firefest and shit now. Remember? He's made like millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. Yeah, those guys are filthy rich.
Just built it off of stealing memes.
The Fat Jew hangs out with Emily Ratajkowski and her busted-ass boyfriend every day, or fiancé or husband, sorry. No offense, busted face guy.
None whatsoever.
Hey, some people have busted faces. I'm sure he's got great abs or something going for him. Well, but no, I'm just saying. Busted face.
You have Emily around your arms.
Whew.
You can say whatever you want about him.
Yeah, yeah. No two-hole. Patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. We now have over 850 dues-paying gang members. Thank you to every single one of y'all for supporting the show. We've got a July special guest coming in, I believe, this week. We've got the Hotline Call Extravaganza next week, and then Columns will be coming in between those two. And that will do it for RBP 203, recorded and produced by Mike Moody and featuring Mike Moody. Also, Grant Davis here at Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. We will catch you Thursday on episode 204. RBP 204 is coming later this week. Gang, gang, gang. Peace be with you and also with you.